15. From the mangled, badly distributed chunks that once had been high buildings, streets, the intricate, strong structures of a major city, four men rose to intercept Nicholas St. James. "How come?" the first of them said, and all were bearded, ragged, but evidently healthy. "No Letty's detected you." Utterly weary, Nicholas stood for a time, and then he seated himself on a broken stone, fished futilely in his coat pocket for a cigarette. The pack had been ripped away by the Letty. And then said, "Two did. When I broke through, they must have picked up the vibrations of the scoop." "They're very sensitive to that," the leader of the group agreed. "To any machinery. And any radio signals, if you, for instance..." "I was. An intercom to below. They recorded the whole thing." "Why'd they let you go?" "They were destroyed," Nicholas said. "Your fellow tankers came up after you and got them. That's what we did. There were five of us originally, and they got the first one up. They weren't killing him. They were going to drag him off to one of those... you wouldn't know. Runcible's Conaps. Those prisons." He eyed Nicholas. "But we got them from behind. Only they killed that first man, or actually what happened was he got killed when we fired on the Lettys. I guess it was our fault." The man paused. "My name's Jack Blair." One of the other bearded men said, "What tank are you from?" "The Tom Mix," Nicholas said. "And that's near here?" 4 hours' walk. He was silent. They, too, seemed not to know what to say. It was awkward, and all of them stared at the ground, and then at last Nicholas said, "The two Lettys who had me were destroyed by Talbot Yancey." The bearded men stared at him fixedly, unwinkingly. "It's God's truth," Nicholas said. "I know it's hard to believe, but I saw him. He hadn't intended to come out. He didn't want to, but I got him to. I got a good close look at him. There was no doubt." Around him, the four bearded men continued to stare. "How could I not recognize him?" Nicholas said then. "I've seen him on TV for 15 years, 3 or 4, and even 5 nights a week. After a time, Jack Blair said, "But the thing is, there is no Talbot Yancey." One of the other men spoke up, explaining, "See, what it is that it's a fake, you know?" "What is?" Nicholas said, and yet he did know. He sensed the enormity of it in a flash, a fake so vast that it could not even be described. It truly beggared description. It was hopeless for these men to try, and he was going to have to see to experience it for himself. Jack Blair said, "What you're looking at on your TV screen every night down there in, what'd you say, the Tom Mix? Down in your tank, what you call Yancey, the Protector, that's a robot." "Not even a robot," one of the other bearded men corrected. "Not even independent, or what they call intrinsic, or homeo. It's just a dummy that sits there at that desk." "But it talks," Nicholas said reasonably. "It says heroic things. I mean, I'm not arguing with you, I just don't understand." "It talks," Jack Blair said, "because a big computer called Megavac 6VAC or something like that programs it." "Who programs the computer?" Nicholas asked presently. The whole conversation had a slow, dreamlike, heavy quality to it, as if they were trying to talk underwater, as if a great weight filled them all. "Someone," he said, "would have to feed those speeches to it. The computer didn't..." "They have a lot of trained guys," Jack Blair said. "Yancemen, they're called. The Yancemen who are idea men, they write the speeches and feed them to Megavac 6V. And it does something to the words, adds the right intonations and gestures for the dummy to do, so it looks authentic. And it all goes on tape, and it's reviewed in Geneva by the top Yanceman who runs it all, a jerk named Bros. And when he approves the tape, then it's put over the coaxial cable and transmitted to all the ant tanks in West Den." One of the other men added, "There's one in Russia, too." Nicholas said, "But the war..." "It's been over for years," Jack Blair said. Nodding, Nicholas said, "I see." "They share film studios in Moscow," Blair said, "just like they share the New York agency. Some talented commie producer named Eisenblatt. He stages all the scenes of destruct you see on your TV screen. Usually it's in men, done in scale. Sometimes, though, it's life-size. Like when they show Letty's fighting. He does a good job. I mean, it's convincing. I remember, and sometimes, when the TV set we have up here is working, we managed to catch it. We were fooled, too, when we were below. He, that Eisenblatt, and all the Yanchmen, they fooled everybody almost, except sometimes tankers do come up anyhow, like you did. Nicholas said, "But I didn't come up because I guessed. Carol began to," he said to himself. "Carol was right. She's smarter than I am. She knew." "Is all the world like this?" He gestured at the ruins of Cheyenne around him. "Radioactive? Just rubble?" "Oh, hell no," Blair said agitatedly. "This is a hot spot. There now aren't very many left. The rest is a park. They've made the world into a great park, and it's split up into their domains, their estates. They, the Yanchmen, they each have entourages of Letty's, like medieval kings. It's sort of interesting." His voice died away. "But, I mean, it's not fair. At least I don't think so." The other bearded men nodded vigorously. They agreed. It was not fair, no doubt of that. Nicholas said, "How do you people live?" He pointed at the four of them. "Where do you get food?" And then he thought of something else. "Are there more of you?" "In our bunch, there's 200 ex-tankers," Blair said, "living here in the ruins of Cheyenne. We're all supposed to be in prisons, in huge condominium apartment buildings that this guy I mentioned named Runcible builds. They're not bad, not like the tanks. I mean, you don't feel like a rat trapped in a tin box. But we want..." He gestured. "I can't explain it." "We want to be able to come and go," one of the other bearded men explained. "But actually, we can't, living this way. We can't risk leaving the Cheyenne area because then Letty's would catch us." "Why don't they come here?" Nicholas said. "They do," Blair said. "But they sort of don't try very hard. You know what I mean? They just go through the motions. Because, see, this is part of a new domain that's being formed. The villa, the building, isn't finished yet or anything, and it's still hot. But a Yanchman has moved in here, taking a chance. Trying to live. And if he does, if the RA fails to kill him, then this is his. It becomes his domain, and he's the dominus." Nicholas said, "David Lantano." "Right." Blair stared at him oddly. "How'd you know?" "It was two of his Letty's," Nicholas said, "that hooked me." "And they were going to kill you?" He nodded. The four bearded men exchanged apprehensive, disconcerted glances. "Was Lantano at his villa? Did he okay it?" "No," Nicholas said. "They tried to contact him, but they weren't able to. So they decided on their own." "The dumb saps," Blair said, and cursed. "Lantano wouldn't have let them, I'm positive. He'd have been sore. But they were built to kill. I mean, a lot of Letty's are veterans of the war. They have the reflex to destroy life. Unless their dominus tells them otherwise." "But you're lucky to get away. That's dreadful. I mean, that gets me, it does." "But," one of the other men said, "what he said about Yancey, how can that be?" "I saw him," Nicholas repeated. "I know it was him." Jack Blair said, quoting an obscure text, "I saw God. Do you doubt it? Do you dare to doubt it? What kind of weapon did he, this guy who saved you, use? A laser pistol?" "No. The Letty's were pulverized into dust." He tried to make it clear how violent and sudden an abolition of the two Letty's had been. "Just mounds," he said, "of old dry flakes like rust. Does that make any sense?" "That's a Yanchman advanced-type weapon, all right," Blair said, nodding slowly. "So it was a Yanchman who saved you. No ex-tankers have that weapon. I don't even know what it's called, but it's left over from the war, I suppose. They've got a lot, and every now and then a couple of Yanchmen who are neighbors get into a beef over the property line, you know, where one's land ends and the next guy's starts. And they make a dive for the open section of the weapons archives at the agency in New York. That's where all that reading matter is put together. And they come flying back to their domains as fast as hell aboard those little flapples. And they lead their retinues of Letty's into battle. It's really funny. They plug away at each other, potshot like mad. Destroy a dozen or so Letty's, or maim them. And even a Yanchman now and then gets it. And then they send the main leady down below to the nearest tank to fix it up in its shops. And they're always sequestering the brand-new leadies made down below to add to their retinues. Another of the bearded men chimed in. Some Yanchmen at their domains have like 2,000 leadies, a whole army. Bros, for instance, Blair said. He's supposed to have 10 or 11,000. But technically, all the leadies in West Dem are under the military command of General Holt. He can preempt, you know. Supersede the orders of any Yanchman, any dominus of a domain, and call for its leadies. Except, of course, Bros. His voice sank. No one can supersede Bros. Bros is above them all. Like, for instance, he's the only one who has access to the weapons archives, where the advanced types, the ones that never saw action, the really terrible prototypes are, that if they had used, there'd be no planet. The war just barely stopped in time. Another month and nothing. He gestured. I wish, Nicholas said, I had a cigarette. The four bearded men consulted, and then, reluctantly, a pack of Lucky Strikes was held out to Nicholas. He carefully took only one of the cigarettes, let them regain the remainder of the precious pack. We're short on everything, Blair said apologetically as he lit Nicholas' cigarette for him. See, this new Dominus who's starting his domain here, this David Lantano, he's not a bad guy. He sort of, like I said, holds his leadies back when he's around to do it, so they don't wipe us out or get us into one of those conaps. He sort of looks out for us. He gives us food. Blair was silent for a time then. His expression to Nicholas was unreadable. And cigarettes. Yeah, he's really trying to help us. And pills. He personally drops by with anti-radiation pills. They help restore the red blood cells or something. He takes them himself. I mean, he really has to. He's sick, another bearded ex-tanker added. He's badly burned. See, the law requires he's got to be here on the hotspot 12 hours out of every 24. He can't get down subsurface into cellars like we can. We stay below. We just came up because we spotted you. To Blair, he said, nervously. In fact, we better get back to the hovel right now. We've been exposed long enough for one day. He gestured at Nicholas. And him especially. He's been walking on the surface for hours. You're going to take me in? Nicholas said. I can live with you fellas. Is that what I'm to understand? Sure, Blair nodded. That's how our colony formed here. You think we're going to boot you out? Why would we? He seemed genuinely angry. For some leady to kill, or... He broke off. Some charity that would be. You're welcome to stay here all you want. Later, after you know more, if you want to turn yourself in, you go live in a conapt. Must be hundreds of thousands of ex-tankers in those conapts. That's up to you entirely. But wait, get your bearings. He started off along a meager trail among the rubble, a sort of goat path. The others, including Nicholas, followed single file. It takes weeks sometimes, Blair said over his shoulder, to really sober up, to shake off what you've been fed over what they call the coax for 15 years. Pausing, halting for a moment and turning, he said earnestly, intellectually, maybe you accept it, but I know. Emotionally, you can't ride away. It's just too much. There's no Yancey and never was. Never was, Mr. St. Nicholas. No, Nicholas corrected. Nicholas St. James. There never was a Yancey. There was a war, though. Anyhow, at first, as you can see. He gestured at the miles of ruins ahead of them, at Cheyenne. But Yancey was made up by Stanton Bruce, based on an idea of a West German film producer of the last century. You probably have heard of him, only he died before your time. But they still were showing his documentary, The Winning in the West, that 25-part series on TV about World War II. I remember it when I was a kid. Gottlieb Fischer, Nicholas said. Sure. He had seen that great classic documentary not once but several times. It was considered in the same category with The Blue Angel and All Quiet on the Western Front and The Dizzy Man. And he made up Yancey? Gottlieb Fischer? He followed the four of them, eager and anxious, perplexed. But why? To rule, Blair said, without stopping. The four of them hurried now, eager to get back down into what they called their hovel, their deep chamber which had not been contaminated by the H-bombs that had made this region what it was. "Rule," Nicholas echoed, understanding. "I see. Only, as you maybe remember, Fisher disappeared on that ill-fated flight to Venus. He was eager to be one of the first travelers into space. He just had to go. And that was that, because..."
"I remember," Nicholas said.
The event had made huge headlines in the homeopapes at the time. Gottlieb Fisher's untimely tragic death, his spaceship's fuel igniting during re-entry. Fisher had died in his late 30s, and so there had been no more documentaries, no more films equal to The Winning in the West. After that, only non-entities had followed, except, slightly before the war, the interesting experimental films of some Russian, a Soviet film producer whose work had been banned from West Dem. What had been his name? As he struggled to keep up with the swiftly moving bearded men, Nicholas remembered the Russian film producer's name, Eisenblatt. The man Blair had just now said did the faking of the war scenes for the tankers in both West Dem and Pack Peep, the visual confirmation of the lies that comprised Yancey's speeches. So at last, the people of West Dem had gotten to see Eisenblatt's films. Obviously, there was no more hostility between East and West. Eisenblatt was no longer an enemy film producer, as he had been at the time Nicholas St. James and his wife Rita and his kid brother Stu had been prodded virtually at gunpoint into descending into the Tom Mix for what they had believed at the time to be for perhaps a year at the longest, or as real pessimists had forecast, 2 years. 15. And out of that 15... "Tell me exactly," Nicholas said, "when the war ended. How many years ago?"
"It's going to make you hurt," Blair said.
"Say, anyhow."
Blair nodded.
13 years ago. The war lasted only 2 years on Earth after the first 1 year on Mars. So, 13 years you've been snow-jobbed, Nicholas, or whatever you said. Sorry, I forgot again. Nick. How's that, Nick?
Fine, Nicholas murmured, and thought of Carol and Rita and old Maury Souza and Stu and all the others, Jorgensen and Flanders and Haller, Giller and Christensen, Peterson and Grandy and Martino, and on and on and on. Even to Dale Nunes. Even to the Tom Mix's Polcom.
Did Nunes know? Nicholas thought, if Nunes knows, I swear, I affirm, I will in God's name kill him. I will do it with my hand so as to feel it, and nothing will stop me. But it was impossible because Commissioner Nunes had been shut up there with him. But not for all that time. Only for... Nunes had known. He had only a few years ago descended the chute from the Estes Park government, from Yancey. "Listen, Mr. James," one of the bearded men said. "I was wondering, if you didn't guess, then what'd you come up for? I mean, you'd expect to find nothing but the war, and they tell you on TV, boy, I remember, they'd shoot you on sight."
"And that's what practically happened to him," Blair said.
"Because of the bag plague and the stink of shrink, neither of which exists in reality. That's another Fink snow job they made up, those two bacterial plagues. Although there really was that hideous nerve gas we invented, that New Jersey Chemical Corporation, or whatever its name was. A Soviet missile got it, I'm glad to say, right off, including everyone in it. But it's radioactive in this spot, although the rest of the surface..."
"I came up," Nicholas said, "to buy an artificial pancreas, an artiforg, from the black market."
"There aren't any," Blair said. Nicholas said, "I'm prepared to..." "There aren't any. Nowhere. Even the Yancemen can't get them. Bros has them attached. He owns them all, legally."
Blair turned, his face wild with rage, distorted like a hand puppet writhing from the twisting fingers contained within.
"All for Bros, who's 82 or 3 and's full of artiforgs, all but the brain. The company's gone, and now nobody knows how to make them. We're degenerate. I mean, that's what war does. The Yansmen tried, but they didn't work. Grafted in for more than a month or so. A lot of very specialized techniques, depending on what they call highly sophisticated equipment. You know, delicate tools and all. I mean, it was a real war while it lasted. Don't forget that.
The Antmen have their domains, and you guys down below make leadies for them, and they fly around in their goddamn little flapples. The agency in New York cranks out speeches, and Megavac 6V is kept functioning, but... Shoot. He gave up, walked on in silence. Nicholas said presently, I've got to get the pancreas. You'll never get it, Blair said. Then he said, I've got to get back to the Tom Mix and tell them. They can come up. They can forget the quota and the threat of having the tank abolished. Sure they can come up. And be prisoners above ground. It's better, I agree. Runcible is starting a whole new constellation of CONEPs in the southern Utah region. See, we hear a lot of news because David Lantano gave us a wideband radio receiver. Just AUD, not VID. But we pick up the stuff that's transmitted not to the ant tanks, but like between domains. They're always blabbing away to each other in the evening because they're lonely. Just maybe one guy in his 50,000-acre domain with his leadies. No families, Nicholas said. No children? They're most of them sterile, Blair said. See, they were on the surface during the war, remember? Mostly at the Air Arm Academy at Estes Park. And they lived. They were the elite of the U.S., the young Air Arm cadets. But they can't reproduce. So, in a way, they paid real high for what they've got. For having been the elite cadets in that great bomb-proof structure in the Rockies. We paid too, Nicholas said. And look what we got. You wait a while, Blair said. Think it over about trying to get back to your ant tank to tell them. Because the way the system up here is run, they'd be better off, one of his bearded compatriots put in defiantly. You've forgotten what it's like down there. You're getting senile like old Bruce. Runcible's made sure they're better off. He's a darn good construction man. They have ping pong and swimming pools and wall-to-wall carpet of that funny plastic imitation. Then how come, Blair said, you're squatting here in these ruins instead of lounging in a swimming pool in one of those conept constellations? The man grunted, gestured. I just like to be free. No one commented. It did not require it. But another topic did seem to require additional comment, and Blair musingly supplied it. To Nicholas he said, I just don't get it, Nick. How could Talbot Yancey have rescued you if Talbot Yancey doesn't exist? Nicholas said nothing. He was too weary to speak. And anyhow, he did not know.